judge over at Denton. Robin is a former past president of the association?
Yes, sir.
And he's the second vice president now?
Yeah, I think.
Does that mean you're going to be president again?
No.
Okay.
No, just second.
I mean, you know,
second to the first, which isn't the president. So,
some people love punishment. Anyway, let's give him a warm welcome.
Thanks.
And we're going to talk about ethics.
Well, it's always nice to be in Midland. Actually, I literally flew in last 15 minutes. I'm a last-minute kind of guy, and I love Southwest Airlines, or always have, and they've cut down the total number of flights. So I was supposed to be here last night, and then I went on there to order the ticket last minute, and no flight. And I went, uh-oh. So I flew out this morning, so if I'm a little flustered, I guess that's where it is. And, of course, we're talking about ethics, which is a serious topic. And at the beginning of the year, this actually is a team talk class, and we had a member of the commission that taught it along with me. And I'll be honest, there's a part of that that even to me, as a co-presenter, it was a little intimidating. In fact, I'll tell you the story when I first, when I got the call. And I guess, you know, there's that part that I hope I never lose, but there's a part of me that you feel a little hypocritical when you talk about ethics presentations. Because I think if you really think deeply, all of us have had some situation that if you look back on it, you're going, wow, I can't believe I said that or what I did. You know, and so when I came in off the bench one day, the secretary goes, the Judicial Conduct Commission called. I went, oh, my gosh. You know, and she goes, and I think she even kind of enjoyed it. So I immediately went and I called the number and I said, is such and such there? And she said, no, I'm sorry, she's in a meeting. And I thought, oh, okay, thank you. Well, she said, do you want to leave a message? So I left my name and number. I waited like 10 minutes, didn't get a call back, so I called again. The next time it was like 5 minutes, and then 3 minutes. And finally the lady goes, just a second, let me get her out of her meeting. And I was sitting on pins and needles going, what did I do wrong? And so she got on the phone, she goes, we were wondering if you could do a presentation. And then I went, yeah, well, I knew that. Thank you. So, you know, I think there's that raw part, even as an attorney, you know, in the state bar, there's that section inside the state bar journal every month, and it's almost like you touch it and it's diseased, and I used to flip to the back and read Judge Buckmeyer's, you know, humor section first, but it's almost like you have to read those, but I would force myself to read those sections because I think you're always going, wow, particularly in the state bar journal, you'd read those ones where, you know, attorney failed to return phone calls. And I'm thinking, wow, how quickly are we talking? Are we talking day, hour, whatever else? So there's that part, I think, that we should all get a little bit queasy when we start talking about ethics. And I'm just being honest about that. And I guess I can say that now since I'm the only one presenting this particular version. But it is one of those things that I guess you should never lose that feeling entirely, because I'm sure there are things that I've said and done that probably were not always the best that they could have been handled. At any rate, the objectives of this course are to provide an overview of the commission, its processes, and how they impact judges. We're going to highlight key provisions from the commission's report from 2009, fiscal year 2009. That's the most recent information that we have, a complete year database. And identify cases from fiscal year 2009 that have an impact or relate directly to municipal judges. Of course, the purpose of this discussion and the purpose of the commission in general, we're going to talk about the commission's role, the judge's role, attorney's role, and court staff role. So we'll talk a little bit about the structure first, then we'll get into some of the meat of it. The role of the State Judicial Conduct Commission, of course, the commission was created in 1965, so it's not really that old a creature. It is created by a constitutional amendment. So unlike so many things that change from year to year or session to session, based on statute, it is a constitutional amendment. To that extent, it gives it some stability and link to it. And it is part of the judicial branch of state government, which again gives it independence, which is important. The mission of the commission, of course, is to protect the public, to promote public confidence in the integrity, independence, and impartiality of the judiciary, and to encourage judges, of course, to maintain high standards of conduct, both on and off the bench. And I think those that are both on and off. Sometimes those are the parts that trouble us the most. The authority of the commission comes from Texas Constitution, Article 5, Section 1A, Texas Government Code, Chapter 33 of the Texas Government Code, the Texas Code of Judicial Conduct, which is written by the Texas Supreme Court, and the Texas Removal or Retirement of Judges, which is its own separate section. Jurisdiction is pretty broad. In essence, it covers all different levels of judges, appellate judges, all levels of appellate judges, district judges, associate judges, probate judges, county court of law judges, county judges, justices of the peace, and municipal court judges. So one would think that's pretty much everyone. And, of course, retired, senior, and former judges sitting by assignment. That usually refers to, of course, district and county court judges. One of those, if you've had, what is it, three terms, and then you can continue to sit by assignment as a retired judge. I've also heard there's a term of a retired justice of the peace, but I'm not sure what that status is. Is anyone in your justice of the peace? Do you have to be three terms, or how does that require? Okay. I know the district judges and county court judges come back, and as long as you've been on there for three terms, you can then your administrative judge can assign you in the absence of a different judge. So who does it not cover? Well, the commission's jurisdiction does not extend to any level of federal judges or justices. Federal magistrates are not covered. State administrative law judges, and the last time I taught this class, someone said, why are they not covered? It's under the state and their administrative law. Well, because they are actually under the control of the executive branch of government, and their provisions for removal and appointment are all created under the executive powers of government and their statutes, and so the Texas Administrative Code. And other hearing officers for state agencies. They're also not covered. Commission jurisdiction does extend for conduct even once the judge is no longer sitting on that bench. The former judge may be disciplined for willful or persistent misconduct that occurred while he or she was sitting on the bench, even though they are no longer on that bench. The commission has no authority to sanction a judge for any acts prior to their appointment or election. Or before they took the bench, or for acts that occur after a judge has left the bench, unless the judge is, again, eligible and qualified to sit by assignment. And again, that I know it applies to county and district court judges and may apply to retired justices of the peace as well. The commission has no authority to sanction a judge for mere legal error unless it was made in bad faith. The legal error is egregious. I guess that's kind of like, what do they call that? I was never a real big fan, I have to say, I was swept up in the Dallas Mavericks thing, but I never really, as you can tell, I'm not like the super athlete, and so I was never really aware of all the basketball rules, but they had flagrant fouls as opposed to non-flagrant fouls, and I guess egregious in this context is a flagrant foul in the legal world, or for a persistent pattern of conduct. Overall, even on, as far as state bar misconduct, I think that there is a growing trend toward to hold people accountable for malpractice, almost in the same sense of unethical behavior. I've noticed that's true in the state bar, and I think it's probably true to some extent with the Judicial Conduct Commission. So consistent or persistent misconduct or legal error, not misconduct, but consistent, persistent legal error would also be subject to punishment. Commission members. The commission is actually comprised of 13 total members. They serve for 6 years, staggered terms. It is voluntary service. They are confirmed by the Texas State Senate, and they have members representing all levels of the court, appellate, district, county court at law, constitutional, a justice of the peace, and one municipal court judge. Our current representative is Ed Spillane from College Station. He is he serves, I think he just started his first year this last year, so he serves for a six-year term, and it staggers over time. It's ultimately appointed by the governor, I do believe that. I think that's correct. I know. Who are they appointed by? Chief Justice actually makes the appointment and contact. They are confirmed, though, by the governor's Senate. There are five public members in addition to those six that I just mentioned. There are five public members who are appointed by the governor. And they are not judges or lawyers. They are just members of the public. In addition to that, there are two lawyer members who are neither judges or currently sitting magistrates, but they are appointed by the State Bar of Texas. So the State Bar appoints two. The governor's office appoints five, and the Supreme Court appoints six. And that makes up your 13 members. Commission staff is not all that large, considering the size of the state and the number of courts that answer to it. There is one executive director, Ms. Willing, the general counsel, three staff attorneys, three investigators, two legal assistants, and support staff. I'm not sure exactly how many that is. Of course, their main office is in Austin itself. On the next page, you will find, and I believe it's in your materials, a complaint process. It's relatively complex. But I do suggest this. Of all the things that you might want to print out and have and keep available, in case you do receive a complaint, it does have a flow chart. This is prepared by the Judicial Conduct Commission, and it has the processes and a flow chart for any complaints that come in. Judicial discipline in general, and I didn't stick these pictures in there. I guess that's either the judge being disciplined or the outcry of someone who's been wronged. But the purpose of discipline under the Judicial Conduct Commission is not really intended to punish, but rather sanctions in case of judicial discipline to preserve integrity, independence, and public confidence. I guess really, even as an attorney, one of the things that when I first looked at, I always wanted to be an attorney growing up, and I suppose, you know, I thought that the rest of society, I was used to the concept overall that society as a whole has always hated lawyers and courts and judges to some extent. I don't think I was really ready to believe that your own clients would hate you too before they ever met you. For those of you who are attorneys, have you ever had the client that came in and sat down and said, you know, I think all of you are liars, cheats, and steals, but you got to have one, so you're it. And I'm going, well, that's one heck of a way to start a good working relationship. And, you know, overall, the role of both the disciplinary portions of State Bar and also the Judicial Conduct Commission really to keep the confidence in, from the public to make, you know, because we all hear those situations that arise involving a judge. And just like when it's attorneys, my father used to be a minister and before he passed, obviously, but as a minister, you know, I think there are certain professions and roles that you take in life that you just have to accept that you're held to a higher standard. And that would probably be teachers, lawyers, doctors to some extent, judges, and the things that you say and do. In fact, I'll go one step further. As municipal judges, and some of you probably heard me say this, but I truly, truly believe this, that as municipal judges, we are probably more recognizable as a judge to most people in our community than very often those people who are county or district court judges. And what I mean by that, you know, a lot of cases that are filed in the district and county courts, the attorneys know those judges by sight. They're familiar with them. They're familiar with the names. But for the most part, the general public, other than at election time, really doesn't know the names of those county and district court judges. But I'll submit to you that more people know you as the judge inside your city than probably anyone else. And when you're out on the street, how many times are you walking somewhere and someone goes, hey, judge, and you have no idea? Of course, they've got the advantage on you. All they have to say is judge, and they get you on that one. And so everything you're saying and do, I think, reflects. And at least in my city, and of course, Denton is not that large a city. It's a city of about 120,000 people. And it's bigger, but it's not real big. It's still small enough that no matter where I go, chances are someone will recognize me. And the things, I'll give you an example from last night. My son was talking and goes, hey, did you see that picture that Deshaun Stevenson had on when he got off the plane from the Mavericks? I went, no. I've been at work, like you should be. I've been at work all day, didn't see anything. And so he hands me his iPhone. And with my, you know, getting older, I can't see things real well without putting glasses on. I was looking at it, and I go, I can't really read it. And he goes, well, look at it. So you tap on the, you know, it gets bigger, or whatever else you do, whatever, and it gets bigger. So I read it out loud. And sure enough, there were, and it's not, actually, he doesn't use an obscene word, but if you read it in the context, you know what the word was supposed to mean. For those of you, does anyone know what I'm talking about? I'm not going to say it again, you know. But so I was looking at it, and so I read it out loud. And I looked up, and two rows in front of me, because it was at a Little League playoff game, this lady turned around and looked at me. I went, why'd you hand me that phone? And I gave it back to him. Well, then we get down, I'm going to see her somewhere where she walks and goes, hi, Judge, how's it going? And I went, ooh, wow. Now, I really didn't mean to, because I really didn't even, I was going, how's your, you know, so I read it out loud. And even my wife looked at me like, well, that was stupid. But she does that pretty commonly anyway. But, you know, those are the kind of things that reflect on us. And that more people will probably, if you were a district judge or county court judge, the other attorneys might know you. But rarely are you going to run across the general public. Everyone, particularly juvenile cases, because if you think about it, where do people have contact? Most people in our society have contact with the court, only at several different junctions. One would be jury service, and the other one would be as a Class C traffic ticket. And that's really about the only time that they have contact with the courts, unless they've gone through a particular event, and then it's in that one court, and they do remember that one judge. But you are probably known by more people than anyone else in your community as far as being a judge. So public confidence, the integrity, independence, image is everything. And that's what the commission is there to kind of stand behind and try to clean up and address those issues where we say or do something that could be embarrassing. Yes? Absolutely. What he said was, don't you think that, you know, doing magistrate duties puts you out there a little bit more often? Yes, absolutely, I do. I think probably more people, because that, thankfully, for the majority of people we're dealing with, they still see that as being a traumatic event in their life, and so they're remembering everything about that. You may go into the jail every day. I go into several jails every day. And so, yes, I think people recognize you. Another story. I went to the Arby's with my kids, and the guy at the counter puts the sandwiches on the tray, and he goes, are you the judge at the county jail? And I went, yes. He goes, here's the food. And so I said, kids, come get this. And so, you know, I think people that you've seen, and maybe you don't recognize them, but they recognize you. Yes, absolutely, I think. The magistration, because you're in that context. So you're seeing people on a lot of events, you know, all the way to serious felonies, all the way down, and then traffic tickets and Class C misdemeanors. How many people do you see in an average day? Our court, we run through probably the afternoon docket. We're running, you know, of people, 60 to 100 people, you know, every day. So you multiply that, and you got a big number of fan base, I guess you could say. In fact, I constantly have people go, you know, Judge, you seem pretty fair, you know, and I tell you what, I'll vote for you next time. I go, well, there are two things wrong with that. First of all, I'm appointed, not elected. And secondly, you can't vote. You're a convicted felon now. So, no, I don't really say that. I think that, though. I can't say that. Judicial discipline should, however, announce publicly the commission's recognition that there's been misconduct. It should be a sufficient severity to deter the judge from engaging in such conduct again and to discourage other judges from engaging in similar conduct in the future. And again, I think reading the cases, findings and sanctions, just as it does with the state bar, I think when you read those, there should be a part of you that every time you go, I wonder if I know all the facts, because there's a lot missing. Take that out of context, and it there, but for the grace of God, go on. And now I sound like I'm confessing. That's good. Judicial discipline must not be used for the purpose of vengeance, punishment, or retribution. Tell Robert Flowers that. Yeah, there are probably several. And I think when we were down in Galveston, had someone who stood up and, you know, you know, if you're an attorney, getting a state bar, and as I said, you might be the subject of a Judicial Conduct Commission inquiry. Horrible event. Whether it's founded or unfounded, has no basis at all, I think it, you know, it's the kind of thing that just is sickening to you. And that's why it's important to be aware of these rules. Looking at the 2009 fiscal year report, there were a total in 2009 of 1,458 municipal court judges. 38% of all the judges in Texas are municipal court judges. 78 of the cases filed on were filed on municipal court judges, which applies to only 6% of the total number of complaints filed. Even though we comprise 38% of judiciary in 2009, only 6% of the cases were filed on municipal judges. And actually, if you think of it from that standpoint, it's a pretty good odds, particularly in light of the fact the number of people that we see and who are not represented by counsel. 7 total disciplinary actions were taken against municipal judges, which of the disciplinary actions accounts for 10% of the disciplinary actions taken in 2009. The next section, and we can spend some time on this, I suppose, we're going to talk about cases or opinions and reprimands that came down from the, or actions taken by the Judicial Conduct Commission. There's a part of these, if you read them quickly and you look at them on their face, I kind of put them in the, like the TSA warning, yellow, green, and red, because there are some that I'm going, no way I would ever do that. No way. I mean, that's pretty bizarre. And then the red ones are the ones I'm going, wow, that's, I'd have to understand more because that's such gray area. And then, oh, I'm going, I don't think I've ever thought about doing something stupid like that. I'll tell you at least my opinion and categorization on these. The first one we'll talk about is a private warning of a municipal court judge handed out on December 18th of 2008. The facts generally were these, that after her mother-in-law received a traffic citation, the judge wrote a letter to and telephoned another court in an attempt to resolve a case and obtain favorable treatment for her relative. My first reaction was, green, I've never done that. And then you start thinking, because learning. And I think that there are peculiar issues for us as municipal judges, in as much as we are not, most of us are not full-time municipal judge. I actually am a full-time municipal judge. But my city allows me to practice law on the side if I choose to. And as a part of that, I'll be honest with you, I can think of a situation which it could be construed that I practice in the North Texas area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and at least in the area around, I know Judge Noah from Richardson, Judge Stevenson from Plano, I know people in the area. If I had a client that receives a citation and I make an appearance in court, the mere fact that they know me and I know them might give rise to the claim that I'm using prestige of office. No. A lot of people are going, no, but I'm telling you, do you think that people react differently? I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak because it's one of those nice things to do and you kind of wonder why people would even listen to you talk, but you know, I talk to the clerks all the time, and I can go into most of the municipal courts in the North Texas area, and I'll know at least one or two of those clerks. Is that not in some way laying down a foundation that personal knowledge? Now, I'm not saying that here they're saying that she asked for favorable. So I actually moved this from green to yellow because I think I'd want to know more of the facts. I think I'd want to go, well, you know, what are we talking about? What did the letter say? What were the particulars of it? How did it, you know, how was it addressed? What was the relationship with the court? But I'm just saying that as some of us are allowed to make representation in other courts, the mere fact that you're known as a municipal judge might lend some, even when I go to the district and county courthouse, a lot of the attorneys who appear in my court will say, hey, judge, right? And yes, someone had a question? And I don't know that. And you're right. I think that's fundamental to it. But either way, attorney, of course, if she's not an attorney, she wouldn't have legally had the right to make representation on behalf of her mother or anyone else, or mother-in-law. So that would have been a whole baritory issue. Yeah, that's true. And I will say, I have always, when I have made an appearance in another court, I file my answer, or I file my, you know, my letter of representation just like everyone else. I'm still saying that at some point, if you've been doing it long enough, you're going to be seen as another judge. And I think we have to be very careful. And the reason why I'm trying to point this one out, maybe hammering away at this a little much, is that problem that is peculiar to municipal judges. At least if you're an attorney. Because all the other levels of, well, maybe JPs too. Is that what you just said? Yes, this judge pointed out, and at the same time I thought of it. Justice of the peace and municipal court judges could be attorneys. Now, I don't, you know, I never looked at the judicial canons. Is a justice of the peace allowed to practice law if they're a licensed attorney? As long as they don't practice in their own court, right? Which would give you a decided advantage, I would think. No, I rule against me. Either way, yes, you're allowed to practice. If you're a county court judge or a district court judge, you're precluded by law from practicing as an attorney. So this is a problem that's peculiar for us. And I really do think this is also true, that a lot of the Judicial Conduct Commission cases that I've read, there's this kind of odd approach that they want to apply the standards of all the judges at the same time. They don't, because they know that we're not, for many of us sitting in this room, we are a judge maybe 2 hours a month, right? There are people, I have some small courts too. I have Little Crumb in Texas, and it's right outside of Denton, and 2 hours a month. Let's judge. And that's all the time I call. Well, obviously, I couldn't, you know, make a living out of that. So there's a conflict. Is it because of the nature of our job, we very often do take under other representation if we're an attorney. And even if you're not an attorney, your lending prestige of office doesn't just go to representation in court. If for some reason you're a municipal judge, 2 hours a month, but somehow people know you as the judge and that's how you're getting your business, there's a problem. So just be aware of it. Next one. A judge allowed his name and judicial title, but he used solicit funds on behalf of a scholarship program. Wow. Violation of Canons 2B and 4C2 of the Texas Code of Judicial Conduct, a private warning to a justice of the peace handed on September 22nd, 2008. Now again, the facts could be varied, but most of us kind of go in, we clearly understand that if it's a business, we clearly understand we couldn't do that. We can't use our name as judge to make money. But here it was a scholarship, hopefully for a good cause. Maybe it was a, you know, educational scholarship. But in fact, in this particular case, it was an educational scholarship. But the judge allowed them to use their name and their office title along with the information going out in the packets for soliciting funds. And the Judicial Conduct Commission said that it deserves at least a private warning. Professional competence. The judge failed to follow the law and demonstrated a lack of professional competence in the law when he summons individuals to his court to attempt to mediate a dispute between the individuals when no case was pending in his court. This is one that was green for me, because I'm going, I don't think in my wildest dreams I would believe I could have the ability or power to summons people to my court if I didn't have a case before me. But I once did have a discussion with a judge who said, before they actually took the bench, they said, you know, I've been thinking about this, and what do you think? What if I called the parties once the cases were filed? At least there was a case filing. And he said, but I'll call them at home and talk to them about it and see if I can't work out something between them so that we don't have to waste time in court. It's an efficiency thing. And I said, wow, that would be a problem. And he goes, why? I said, well, ex parte, I admire your sense of judicial efficiency, desire to try to cut down time and trouble for everyone. Yay, that's good. But part of the process is in the process, and the process happens in court. So you can't call people. And actually they said, it happened to be someone who recently elected as a justice of the peace. And he said, well, but there's a difference. You're appointed, and I'm elected, so the Judicial Conduct Commission can't really remove me. And I said, you want to test that theory? And he goes, well, but I'm elected by the people of the county. You're appointed by, I said, it makes no difference. Judicial Conduct Commission, you know, they may strip you of your powers. Yes, you may have a whole salary issue that politically and financially you have to take up with the county. I don't even know how that works out if you're removed by the Judicial Conduct Commission. At any rate, but no, the Judicial Conduct Commission can, and they will sanction you if you decide to mediate or handle cases telephonically before or when the cases are first filed. So, not a good idea. But this was one that was a clear cut for me. Yes? Yes? The question was this, is that she sees a lot of ads or offers for conflict, dispute, mediation courses for mediation and various forms of arbitration is a much more complicated process, but informal dispute resolution. And she said, what is my take on that as a judge? Well, here's the problem is that I will tell you this. There is a provision in judicial canons that allows a judge who is not a full-time judge to perform mediations. There is that. I'll throw that out there, but I'll put it this way. It better never be anything that could, would, or is filed in your court. The judge is not there as a mediator. You don't. Of course, the differences in mediation are that mediation, ultimately, the parties have the ability to consent or not consent. You can go through an entire day mediation. And I used to do mediation back when it was profitable to do mediation before I took the bench. Mediation is a great process, particularly in family law, which is what I practice primarily. But ultimately, in a mediation, both sides have the ability to go, nope, no deal, I'm out of here. The judge, when you've done that, you have just, if in any way, I'm just talking about not even the ethics of it, just talking about the particulars, you've heard information without the other side being present. That's ex parte communication. So the answer is, for the judge, while it may be informative for you to be aware of the processes that are mediation, and particularly for a justice of the peace where you're hearing civil disputes, you could order the parties to mediation, I assume. I've never heard of it. I've never done it on a JP, on a justice of the peace court case. But, you know, now that their jurisdiction's up to $10,000, I'm not sure it wouldn't be a good thing to do. You could order the parties to be mediated by a third party, but never that judge. If it's in your court, hands off. At least that's my opinion. Anyone have a difference of opinion on that? Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, you might as well just hear the case. That's true. And so it may be good information for you to prepare the process, but never for you to act as a mediator. Now, I used to do mediations even once I was appointed as a part-time municipal court judge, and there's a provision that allows for part-time judges to not only do mediations but receive compensation for them. But never, if it was a Class C court case, never touched it and wouldn't. So you have to be very careful about your conflict. In general, I think it's just better to avoid it altogether. Anything else about that one? No. Professional competence case again. The judge failed to obtain the mandatory judicial education hours. Now, this is one that everyone in this room, we can all go green, right? This is good. Because you have achieved this one. You don't have to worry about this one. If you come to our educational requirements and you sit here and participate in the classes, you have met the educational requirements. But I will also hammer away on this. Every year, Texas Municipal Courts Education Center and TMCEC has an education committee, and that education committee considers exemptions and cases in which people have failed to meet their educational criteria and have not obtained the classes. Sometimes there are very good reasons given, and they're, the Education Committee can offer some alternatives, but failure to obtain the education is grounds for a Judicial Conduct Commission sanction. And that's what happened in this particular case. And this was a private admonition of a municipal court judge. Pursuant to Canon 3A and 3B2, required mandatory judicial education. Failure to follow law. The judge relinquished his judicial duties to officers in the police department and allowed them to accept pleas and collect fines and court costs from criminal offenses that rested on Class C misdemeanor or on-site offenses and or arrested on outstanding warrants or capiuses. This was a private admonition to municipal court judge. And I'll tell you, when I first read this one, and I've read a little bit more on the facts, but when I first read it, green, no problem, never. Wouldn't never do this. I wouldn't tell my police officers they could do it. And then I went, well, you know, if I really think about this hard enough, and again, I'm going to share a little bit of experience with the North Texas area. We have a lot in North Texas, and I didn't realize this for years, but and someone has a difference of opinion, but it took me years to realize that only in the North Texas area do we have this kind of agreement that one city will absolutely hold a prisoner for another city in the Metroplex area. And so if you got arrested in Richardson on a Denton warrant, Richardson would hold him. And if you got arrested in Denton on a Richardson warrant, or Plano or Garland or Farmers Branch or Carrollton, we all held each other for transfer up on that. The reason why I was told this down in the Houston area, I have been told, and if someone knows to the contrary, speak up. But in the Houston area, for instance, if you had a Houston Municipal Court warrant, and you got stopped in Conroe police officer wouldn't arrest or wouldn't even be aware of the Houston warrant, and Houston PD would walk up and go, hey, you have some warrants out of Conroe, here's a ticket, and be careful, because if you go through Conroe, you're going to get busted. Have a good day. So you didn't get arrested. Is that, anyone know anything to the contrary on that? In the North Texas area, we're particularly vicious in North Texas. We arrest certainly on warrants and capiuses, and we even have those nasty red light cameras and all that. So in North Texas, be very careful when you drive. But here, we will hold for each other. Now, the reason why I've gone all through that diatribe is because of the number of people now that are being arrested. And I don't know about you, but my warrant numbers have just gone through the roof. And are y'all seeing that kind of sad experience where people are coming Friday night in Denton? I think the city of Denton jail runs like the fifth best hotel in all of Denton. And there's probably some truth to that too. And there are probably like 20 hotels. But on Friday night, you know what they do? They come up to the lobby, go, I have warrants, I'm here. And some of them, if we can't find the warrant, have you had those people that show up on Monday morning upset? I showed up on Friday, and y'all couldn't find my warrant, and I couldn't get into jail. And I go, let me get this straight. You're upset because you couldn't get thrown into jail. That's what's upsetting you, but to clear the warrants. They don't want to pay the fines, or they can't pay the fines, or whatever the deal. But in Denton and surrounding areas, we have so many warrants now that the sheer logistics of moving people around, feeding, housing, and caring for them, and I think something else you have to agree with, at least in our context, a lot of the people that we deal with have other issues, lots of other warrants. There are people in the North Texas area that I'll call it, they're on the grand tour, because when they get stopped, sometimes I'll see them in my jail, because they started out in Mesquite, they had warrants in Mesquite, then they were moved to Garland, because they had warrants in Garland, then they went moved to Richardson, because they had warrants in Richardson, then they were moved to Farmers Branch, and then went to Addison, and then they went to Carrollton, and then they went to Louisville, and then they came to Denton. There was a guy in the Denton County Jail that had been class misdemeanor only, had been there for almost 80 days. Grand tour. And so he made the Metroplex. Well, the logistics of all that means that we sometimes now have our police officers that are faxing pleas down to another jail to get them to sign the plea. I'm not going to get into it because it's a reality, at least in my area, isn't it, Judge Noah? It's a reality. The jails, the warrant officers will be faxing pleas. And when that's happening, what's happening in those particular cases? They're pleas being taken, not by a magistrate or by a judge, because that's a whole different issue, but the police officers go, hey, dude, we have this warrant from Farmers Branch, this warrant from Carrollton, this warrant from Denton. If you sign on these, we're going to fax them back. They're going to give you partial credit or full credit, and you're going to go. Is that a judicial plea? I don't think so. But I know it's going on, and it's going on in the city of Denton. So this case actually made me, I went from green to almost red very, very quickly. Because I thought, you know, that's in a weird sense what's happening. And then they bring me the papers, and I'm signing off on those papers. People, now generally defendants are okay with that because they're getting credit. At least in my courts, they're going to get a lot of credit. Full credit sometimes. But, in fact, very often full credit. But I'm just saying the logistics and the procedure that's going on, I'm not sure that complies with anyone's concept of law. And it's certainly not justice. And here's the other thing about taking pleas, jail. Even when it's done by the judge or by a magistrate, do we really think that's not a coerced plea? How many people will sign just about anything to get out of jail? So, again, we have some ethical issues that are raised by the sheer process of what we deal with. And in certain areas, by the sheer numbers we're dealing with. Yes. Oh, gosh, I knew I shouldn't have said that. I think you could have him sign a promise to appear. It's the taking of the plea that creates a problem, I think. You're getting... Or the truest form, your warrant office goes down, picks him up, hauls him up to your court, or you send him a notice saying, release on our hold at this time, we have no further interest in holding, we will reissue our warrant. And that actually is happening with more and more frequency in the North Texas area. The good news is really, and it's not because of this sanction necessarily, but over the last 2 or 3 years, because of the numbers of people we're talking about, I mean, you could run a bus line. In fact, if I wanted to judge, I think about getting a little van, driving from city to city and delivering prisoners. But it's a river of people going through here. So what you could, and that used to be the biggest problem. And now I think you have more and more people that say, well, hold for 24 hours. If they don't post bond, then release them. We'll reissue our warrant. If they don't show up, give them a date to appear. That's probably the purest, most direct way if you're not going to be there. Or there is a process under 1518, out-of-county pleas, and says a magistrate shall take a plea. I'm not even going to get into that one, am I, Judge? No. But there are some other alternatives. The issue is this, is police officers are not judges. Police officers are not magistrates. They are part of the executive branch of government. And when they act in the capacity of accepting and asking for a plea, I didn't really even have the problem with they're the conduit for passing the plea on, but you know what's happening is in the jail, you don't see it, and some officer walks up and says, sign here. That's the problem. So my strongest suggestion is either you find a way to grant a PR bond, they bond out, or you tell them that they have to release our promise to appear, or you say we'll release our hold and we'll pick them up later. And there is a part of warrant process, and I'm not sure if it's collections, if money is our goal, and it isn't, I don't think, but if money is the issue and you're under collections improvement program and so forth, it's called warrant Groundhog Day. It just never goes away. They just keep getting arrested, and I'm not sure if that's not more cruel, to be honest with you. Well, that, Judge, I would submit to you that would be right there. Uh-huh. Now, did you order it? Did you control it? The answer is no. But I think we're all called upon to try to make those institutional changes that are necessary to not. Maybe that's part of my self-confession. And the point of this admonition is police don't call the shots. The police don't run the show, and the police don't make the representation to the defendant. There are constitutional rights that person has, and one of those very important rights, even if it's a client, is the right to a trial by judge or jury. And when we police engage in conduct like that, now, I'm particularly concerned that there's some kind of, you're talking about an on-site offense? And you said a non, what was your term that you said? Non-citizen. Okay. And so they're stopping, that's the only kind they're doing this with? Oh, wow. Paris, Texas. So that's a form of French. Well, now that part I don't know if you're saying that they released him on a ticket or you released him on a ticket. I think the legitimate reason for arresting someone on an onside offense, well, that's wrong. Texas state law allows you to arrest onside for all offenses. One is speeding, the other one, what's up with that? But those are the only two that specifically you can't arrest for. And I will say in Denton, our police what it is. It means riding or walking on the wrong side of the roadway. There is an offense. It's a legitimate offense. And also not having white light on your bicycle is a legitimate offense. But you know what it really is? I said you should just title it walking within 500 feet of a known crack house. That's what you're doing. So, the problem is that they should be, you as a magistrate, you could order their release with a promise to appear before the court, but it's the taking of the money and the plea before they've ever. Here's another thing. How do they take money on an offense that there's no complaint filed yet? Why? Well, international drivers are legitimate driving. And I went to school for years. Just a second. Money, what the judge said here is money collected by the jail is really in the form of a bond. And I think that's the safe, and yes, now there are people, but you, and that's probably the only context in which you should be taken in. There, a lot of jails will have the bottom on that bond, the cash conversion that says, I waive my trial rights if I fail to appear on that date and time. The wording is everything on that, in that game. But taken in the context of the jail should be seen as a bond unless the defendant certainly indicates otherwise. Here's another complication to it. Although the Judicial Conduct Commission is looking at it from this very context, something else that's peculiar to Texas state law or to Class C, you can enter a plea, waive trial, and make your appearance by mail. So if you had a way to have them drop it in the mail, would it all be okay? Do you see where I'm going with this? It's just that things that seem at first to be very clear, huh? Or leaving in a box. We have a drop box in our court. Blue box in the front of the building, and you drop it in there. We get all sorts of stuff dropped in there. But that's what you do. So there are alternatives. I'm just asking you to think about, in particular if you're subject to a collection improvement program, be very careful that every aspect of your operation complies with the law. And why is in court this would never happen. In court, this would never happen in the city of Denton. Everyone clearly knows they have a right to this and that, and I very specifically on the record and in writing make them waive their trial, and I say, so you're entering a plea of no contest or guilty, and you're waiving a trial by judge or jury, is that correct? I confirm that information. If they say no, I say, then when do you want do you want a trial by judge or by jury? And that's where we go. So in court this wouldn't happen. And what I'm saying, this judge is also concerned in court, you would never let that happen, would you? But you're, as the manager of the court system, in a sense, you're responsible for all aspects. Even those, again, raising the collection improvement program issue, some of the courts who have, or flaws in all their other operations, you know where they ran into problems with it? Was in their jail process, that they were having people that were going around the collection improvement program by because they didn't talk to the collection improvement manager prior to being released. So those are all issues. Yes, Judge Noah. Did everyone hear? Yes. Did everyone hear what he said? He said he's aware of a company that offers a service for police departments. Of course, now that a lot of them have gone to the rider process and it's all electronic and you zip their driver's license, he said there's also a card reader and then you just take the defendant's credit card at the scene, you zip it through, and then it's applied as a fine if the defendant wants to. And I would say that's, you know, and the problem is those companies that are hawking those services are probably used to dealing in some other states where traffic tickets are civil and they're not criminal. And because they're civil, man, that's cool. You can waive whatever you want to waive. But in Texas, constitutionally, you're entitled to some rights. So in Texas. I know. But and here's the problem, though. You will hear even our own cities, and I don't want to trash our cities, but even our own cities, there's that part of them where they're going, oh, yeah, okay, court. No, but we're talking about collections here. Hello. You know, and so they're going, yeah, I'll go play court and do the jury trial thing and all that. And so the pressure is coming from those of your city. Where's the cha-ching, baby? It's all about the money. And when that starts happening, the city will facilitate those kind of things. The red light camera, and Denton was an early advocate of that, the red light cameras are completely outside of that system. Now they're under Chapter 707 of the Transportation Code. So it is not. But you know what I have the hardest time with? As defendants, or people, well, I guess they're respondents, who receive a red light ticket, photo enforcement red light ticket, their hardest jump is, in Texas, we believe that we have these rights. And suddenly when it's administrative, people are going, what? I can't do that. Yeah, we'll read Chapter 707 of Transportation. It's different. It's different. It's civil. But that's beginning to blur the lines. And I think that that's why there's confusion. These companies are coming and offering services. But I would agree, in its application currently, it's not too different from this. Did we go over that one? Next one. The judge, without notice to the defendant or his attorney, contacts the defendant's employer to alert them to the fact that the criminal charges were pending against the defendant, violation of Canon 2A of Texas Code of Judicial Conduct, resulting in a private admonition. This was great to me. I don't think I'd ever think of picking up the phone and calling an employer or a family member or anyone else, but those were the facts. Failure to maintain proper decorum. Now, this is one that we could spend a little time on, although we're running short on time, and I know, as a man that you can tell, I enjoy my food, and so I won't get you there any later than 12 noon. The judge exceeded his authority by providing parents in the school district with a safe haven for the administration of corporal punishment, paddling. While acknowledging that the legislature had not provided the courts with any legal authority to impose corporal punishment as a sanction under the Texas Education Code or the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, the judge routinely facilitated and permitted the paddling of juveniles in his courtroom, thereby clothing the practice with an improper judicial blessing. This court sanctioned paddling, which subjected the students and their parents to public embarrassment, humiliation, pain, and fear, and failed to maintain proper decorum. It resulted in a public warning of justice of the peace back in March of 2009. Now, this case actually got some press because what was happening there, and so the judge was not administering the list, whatever you want to call it. The judge was simply allowing choose to administer paddling in the courtroom in front of the rest of the defendants if the parent, I think it was an option that was being given to them in lieu of payment of fine, the parents had the choice of paddling them. Well, you know what? The parents had the choice of paddling them anyway within the law. And so the problem was is the context of where and when. There were also some other factors that I think played into it because I went and read the case because, you know, you'll have judges across the state, when I've been teaching this, have said, don't see anything wrong with it. You know, in Singapore, they do some public caning. And so there are people out there, and actually, remember that case, that American citizen that in Singapore that spray-painted some cars and he got caned? For one thing, caning is an unbelievably extreme process, but there in USA Today, because the only reason I remember this, there were a majority of people in the United States supported it. I don't think they knew what caning meant, but they supported it. But here the court was saying, or the conduct commission was saying, it's where it happened, and the parents certainly have that right. But since it was not sanctioned by law, the judge doesn't have the authority to create a safe haven, to create an environment where this occurs. I think I've also heard that he had a paddle up on the wall. Does anyone else? I think it was in the facts. Right, he was doing it in lieu of a parent paying a fine. It's not provided by law. And it certainly got a lot of press. Poor demeanor. Now, this is one that was clearly green to me that I didn't worry about. The judge was angry after a driver allegedly ran his car off the road. In response to this action, the judge followed the driver, a local college student, to her apartment complex. Now, I don't know about you, but right there, I'm thinking you got some serious issues if you're going to follow, because it's a, you know, the allegation is just creepy. Anyway, B identified himself as a judge. There's the judicial conduct commission gets involved. Requested that she appear in his court. Requested was a strong suggestion and request. Admonished her from the bench while wearing judicial robes, and there was no case pending. And then directed the bailiff to issue a citation to the student after becoming annoyed with the argumentative behavior of her father. Well, that about covers it. Canons 2A, 2B, and 3B4, public admonition of justice of the peace. Poor demeanor. Because of prior dealings with a member of a local defense firm, the judge criticized an attorney from that firm who had asked for a continuance on his client's traffic case, questioning his professionalism, integrity, and decency. This one to me was kind of a yellow because, you know, there are times that I have attorneys that show in my court that are routinely missed deadlines and so forth. Now, I will have to say I'd never thought of in the courtroom going, well, you're a loser and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've never done that, and I don't think I'd ever want to. But, you know, there are times that you get a little bit more severe with attorneys who don't show up at times. So I guess that's what I'm going to do. I don't know exactly what was said and why it was said, but I'll assume it was more than just a mere, you never show up. You know, I require that you and your client be here. Poor demeanor. The judge chastised and directed profanity toward a constable on two separate occasions, one relating to service of process on a small claims defendant and one relating to service of an arrest warrant. And that was a private warning of the Justice Peace in December of 2008. There are probably two things that you do if it involves or any form of discrimination that, or even close, the mere utterance of the words said in jest or otherwise in the wrong context. And I'm saying even that's why I nearly had a stroke when I read that thing out. You know, I was doing this distance and I realized what I said. Because then I really had a stroke when the lady said, hey, judge, because I knew that she had heard it. Because even though the word, actually it wasn't an obscene word, but in its context, you know darn well what, was it Deshaun Stevenson? Is that who did it? It was on the shirt as he got off the plane. And the appearances, what was it even? It's a biblical, you know, Paul said, it's not only evil, it's the appearance of evil. So any form of discrimination, racial, sexual, cultural, or profanity can only be bad. It only ends up with bad news. Access to records. The judge failed to provide a citizen reasonable access to inquest records as required by law. Of course, since it's inquest, it would have had to been a justice of the peace, but it certainly applies to all levels. And some of us, this goes, of course, what your staff does is a reflection of what you do. And be careful that your staff is not denying people to reasonable access to records. Yes, there are open records style rules regarding, but they're under Rule 12. And the other thing is that government really does have to be based upon openness. It really does. As painful as that can be at times, it is essential to people believing. The only credibility we have is the fact that people can believe that we're going to be forthright and straight up about it. Yes. Of question is, what about these driver safety schools that ask for every citation so they can send out their notices? If it is a record within your control, now, of course, Rule 12 is a little bit different in that we're talking about not necessarily, but even an open records request, it's a document in the possession of the short and long answer is, yeah, they're probably entitled to it. In fact, not probably, they are entitled to it. The format, and the ones I have a problem with are say, and we want copies or this information for the next 2 years in the future. No, don't have it in my possession. You can ask for what we have, but I can't give you information in advance. Two more minutes. Yes. Or is there someone over here? No. I mean, a commercial entity is it, whether it's being done for profit or not, it's an entity. If they're juveniles, no. Particularly if they're subject, there's been a conviction and therefore there's been an order of non-disclosure. Well, but going back to just even as an open records request, there is no distinction made. A corporation has, if it is a government, if there's a document within the control and maintenance of a government entity, they do have to provide it. Last one real quickly, professional competence, granted deferred disposition to commercial drivers, waived alcohol awareness and community service requirements, granted deferred disposition for more than 180 days, dismissed traffic citations without prosecutor motion, failed to reduce deferred disposition orders and final judgments to writing. That about covers it too. That was a pure green to me. And it goes on, finding numerous individuals in contempt without legal authority. I read that one myself. It was all sorts of contempt. Be very, 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 very careful with contempt. Contempt, you can get in lots of trouble. Is it this afternoon or tomorrow? 4:00. Good class. The contempt procedures require their own protections. And then the public statement is just, and you can read this one, public statement 2000-1. This is actually one of the last slides. I'll leave you with this one. It's just a statement given by the Judicial Conduct Commission regarding judges who are serving as a judge in one jurisdiction and are serving as a police officer in another. And the public statement said this, in essence, while it may be legally possible because the AG's office, there's an AG's opinion, says, well, it's legal, it provides for it, the Judicial Conduct Commission says what is legal is not necessarily ethical. And so while you may be able to do it legally, ethically it would be a violation. Because it undermines the distinctions between the judiciary and the executive. And then that's really it. Helpful information at the back about Judicial Conduct Commission. If you have questions, you can call them. They have experts on the phone. Any questions? Well, good. Lunchtime.